This podcast includes unapologetic logic and reason and may not be suitable for all audiences. In a world full of nonsense, he's been called the voice of uncommon common sense. He sees the abnormal that many find normal. Author and award-winning speaker, he is Chris.
Welcome back to the Christopher Scott Show. It's been an exciting weekend here. I had a lot going on. Exciting and cold. We had a bit of an Arctic blast, I guess, come through. I don't know if you call it an Arctic blast when it comes out of Texas, but it was cold here. We had some snow. I was out shoveling, hacking through ice that the doggone snow plows plowed up. I don't know how many people deal with that. Not fun, but I'm not going to focus on the negative because I'm feeling good. I think I sound great. Wouldn't you agree? Maybe not. Anyway, hey, maybe it's Sunday night for I've been posting these podcasts a little bit earlier. I think it's worked out well. There's a number of people that enjoy that. And it was something that I always enjoyed, still do, listening to talk radio podcasts on a Sunday evening. I just think it's a great way to wind down the weekend and prepare your mind a little bit for the week to come. And so hopefully I'll remind myself of that and try to be an example of that, kind of to set the mindset, if you will, give you a little bit of encouragement, something to look forward to. So where do I want to jump in? There's so much I could talk about here. Really an exciting 48 hours for me, and I'm not joking around about that. You may laugh at me, but I'm not joking around about it. Let me first get into this. I just subscribed to this service. I'll just tell you. Growth.me. It's book summaries. They're available on audio or print. Actually, one of you recommended this to me. There was a particular book, and I checked it out. I actually ordered that book as well. I don't have it yet. I'll talk about that when I get it, I guess. Not I guess, I will. Anyway, Growth.me, this book summary service, pretty good. Pretty good. I like it. I don't know how long I'll keep the service, but I'm finding it useful for now. You may want to check it out as well. So I don't give it a strong recommendation, but I'm using it. So that's that. Anyway, in the process, I stumbled across this book, 12 Rules of Life by Jordan Peterson. I don't know if you've heard or checked out any Jordan Peterson, but yeah, he's a smart guy. He makes a lot of sense, digs deep into topics. I don't know. Please don't email me and tell me what a creeper, a jerk he is. Like, I don't know everything about the guy, all right? I just know from what I've seen that I liked it. I saw the summary on the book, and I found it to be interesting and felt that I wanted to check it out, okay? So I ordered the book, and I've been reading it. It's called 12 Rules for Life by Jordan Peterson. Now, I want to share with you just a couple little nuggets and kind of talk about it a little bit. He says in the West, which I think he's from Canada, if I'm not mistaken. I was like, in the West or America. And then I thought, well, maybe, I don't think he's American. I think he's Canadian, but I don't know. Maybe there's one. But anyway, he says in the West, we've been withdrawing from our tradition, religion, and even nation-centered cultures, partly to decrease the danger of group conflict, aka mob rule. I added that. But he said we're increasingly falling prey to the desperation of meaninglessness, and that is no improvement at all. So I read it. You could decipher that on your own. What I take that to mean is he's saying, as we abandon these things, which is one thing in and of itself, but what we're giving it up for is really no improvement at all because there's no substance to it, I guess he's saying. There's no meaning in it. There's no purpose in it. And, religion is getting talked about now like it's some kind of abstract idea. But, religion, the noun, it provided that sense of purpose, did it not? In a good way, did it not? Yes, there was a practical purpose of the Bible, Christianity, and all religion for that. Well, I don't know about every single religion. And, somehow there's this thinking out there that suggests that, you know, religion was to control the masses. I don't doubt that it's not used to control the masses. It seems like, you know, cross cultures that, you know, people seem pretty comfortable trying to govern, restrict, and tell people how to live their lives when, you know, but they get a little bent when people try to do it to them. I don't know. It's just my observation. One of those funny ironies. But anyway, you know, Jordan Peterson, he's a guy to put like a deep topic out there. And, you know, I'm interested to hear what you would have to say. Do you see us abandoning our tradition, our religion? You do. I know you do. You have to see that. If you don't, you wouldn't be listening to this podcast. It's getting watered down. It's getting obscured, wouldn't you say? I don't know. Christianity today, this popular Christianity, I don't know. It's not for me. I can tell you that. I'm not like a Christian music guy. I'm not a Christian band worship guy. So I don't know. I'm just not in that group. It's not how I do it, not how I want to do it. I don't have a problem with it, whatever. But I'm wondering there too. You know, I just look at the outcome. And, you know, there's problems within Christianity that crosses the Catholics and Protestants as well. Both churches having many, many difficulties. And the church too has abandoned its own tradition, religion, culture. Right? Why? Because we don't want the conflict. And let me discuss that a second, this idea of conflict, because it comes up on this podcast a lot. It comes up an awful lot. People ask me about it, I talk about it, and it comes up a lot. To say that conflict is bad and we're going to avoid it at all costs. Let me give you a little example, a little story example. And, let me say it clearly first. I don't think that avoiding conflict for the sake of avoiding conflict produces any progress. And I think it's morally wrong. And I could give you countless examples, but let me give you, I guess, the best example that I can. Recent memory. So this is kind of a fun story. We got a new dog a couple weeks ago. He's a little German Shepherd lab mix. His name is Duke. I'm going to tell you, this stinking dog is like incredible, man. I love dogs, but this guy is going to take the cake as numero uno. I mean, he's smart, 3 months old. Anyway, my daughter is a super duper animal lover. She loves horses. She rides every week. She loves dogs. She has fish. She loves insects. She got an insect collection. They're like in these glass cases. She loves animals. I did too as a kid. I had a skull collection that I collected as a kid. I was tracking animals, and she's going to be doing the same thing. I can see it right now. She loves it. Anyway, we had dog trainer come over on Saturday. We got the new puppy, the pit bull we have. She's a little over a year old, and things were getting a little chaotic. So Jen wisely decided to engage the services of a dog trainer who happened to be a retired canine cop. So this guy comes over and he brings the puppy out and he puts the puppy on the leash just the very beginning. And the puppy goes nuts, flipping at the neck, and had this shrill, you know, she's like a Tasmanian devil. Well, my daughter was freaked out. She sees the dog in duress. And stop, stop, stop. And she's crying. And we say, no, it's okay. And she runs in her bedroom. So here's an example of, you know, what we've been doing as a culture to avoid conflict and the result of it. And I think it really paints a true picture. You know, I think, you know, I don't know if I'd say the wokeness, political correctness. I don't know if it's correct to apply that here. But it seems to be the things that we do now. We just stop training. We have to find a better way to train the dog, right? We're better than that, you know. And in reality, so what I did is I waited a couple of minutes because nobody wants to see the dog doing that. I had the same thing happen to me with the pit bull. I tried to wash her, and she flipped out. I was like, whoa. I mean, she was, like, flipping off the ground. I was like, man, this dog's going nuts. And the trainer taught us. I didn't know this about that. I know a lot about dogs. I know this. You get in this little power trip in the beginning. I gave my daughter time to calm down, and I went in their bedroom. Not mom, me. I said, "You all right, sweetheart?" She's still crying. And she makes up excuses when she gets embarrassed. You know, so she starts telling us. I was like, "Listen to me, sweetie. You love animals, right?" "Yes, I love animals." I said, "Well, it's important that the animal knows how that it behaves so that we can enjoy the animal, that he can be safe." And, you know, we talked about the dog jumping on her and hurting her. And so she got to understand why we were doing this training. But we weren't done yet. I said, "I need you to get yourself together. If you need another minute, it's okay. But you need to come out and train the dog." And she did exactly that. It was a minute or two, and she came out, you know, for a little bit. But then she saw that the dog was okay, and then she was okay. And then when she was done, we talked to her. I said, "Hey, aren't you happy you did that?" And she agreed that the dog's, this guy, I'm telling you, he was over for about 2 hours. I think he's comes for like 6 weeks or something. It was pretty expensive, but well worth it. The amount that we got out of one day that the dogs, it's like, you know, if one barks, they all barks. We put a stop to that. They're all sitting. They stay. Next week, I think we do. And right now, if you open the door to let them out, it's like they just kill each other to get out. He's like, "God, we'll fix all that up." So anyway, look, my point is this. Jordan Peterson says, look, you know, we're giving up our identity, our principles, because we're afraid that there's going to be, you know, this conflict because the mob's going to get angry. But it's leaving us in this desperate state of meaningless. And I'm saying, look, to avoid conflict is no compassion at all. Matter of fact, I think I had that exact conversation with my daughter. I said, "You know, sweetie, if the dog doesn't know how to listen, right, and he runs out in the street and doesn't listen, he's going to get hit by the car." And then she understood why. Anyway, I don't know if I made any sense with that. I thought it was pretty intellectually stimulating. Thought perhaps that you might as well. I'm just pulling out a few tidbits from the book here. He says, on a cultural level, a refusal to recognize error causes mass evil, injustice, and death. In the Soviet Union, millions of people were sent to forced labor camps called gulags. Is everybody not familiar with the gulag history? I am. I learned it in school. He says, the Russian author Alexander Solzhenitsyn revealed how the collective evils that happened in the Soviet Union could be traced back to each individual's refusal to admit the miserable truth of their daily existence. Everybody lied because they were scared. They said life was great when it was not. As eventually, this deceit made their society spiral out of control. Let's see. He says, if you ever wonder how perfectly ordinary, decent people could find themselves doing the terrible things the gulag camp guards did, you now know your answer. By the time no one seriously needed to be said, there was no one left. Oh, by the time something seriously needed to be said, there was no one left capable of saying it. And here we are today. Right? Don't you dare say that the election was stolen. Right? Don't you dare question Barack Obama's birth certificate. Don't you dare suggest that any national tragedy was done purposely. The list goes on and on. The censorship, it's very, very dangerous. And this is Jordan Peterson laying out the history, so you don't have to take it from me. There's quite a bit else. So let me jump into this. This is like a big deal to me. I think I'm excited about it, and I'll see if it excites you. But it presents an exciting opportunity. I was sharing it with a few people close to me over the weekend. I want to share it with you just briefly here. Hopefully by now you know that I'm also an author. I've written 3 books, and I have a 4th book that's audio only. That book is free on my website, ChristopherScottShow.com. It's called Uncommon Advice for an Extraordinary Life. And so I got a little bit of writing experience, and I have a ton of ideas for other books that I'd like to write. It's really become a basis for me to establish myself, I guess you could say, as a bit of an authority. And as much as I have some experience writing and some tales to tell about, I also have a book that I've been working on since the beginning of the podcast, over 3 years now. I have, 150 pages written on that thing. And I'm like halfway done. I just can't seem to get it done after all this time. Lost focus, lost the idea of what the book is about. It's the whole thing's become hazy. It's just been really hard for me. So in the meantime, Stan and I are working on a book together. I think I mentioned that. And I'm going to have a lot to say about that, but not right now. I want to talk about the book writing process right now. The other thing that I have going on, so I'm writing the book with Stan. Got some experience writing books, writing a book now with Stan. And we're moving along pretty good on that one. But I think we got a little lucky out of the gate. We'll see if that continues. And then the other thing is that I'm starting a new podcast I've mentioned briefly. In addition to this podcast, it's going to be a different genre, and it's going to be a weekly podcast. And it's in part my insurance policy to be able to continue broadcasting. Should something happen to this politically oriented podcast. Anyway, I want to publish a book to promote that other podcast. Other podcast. And so, especially with writing with Stan and then also wanting to do another book at the same time, knowing that as much as I've written some stuff, I'm struggling with it. It brought up the subject again, how to write a book fast. And I mean, I have all these ideas of stuff that I could write about. I mean, I sit here and I talk for an hour a day. I mean, I basically deliver to you a book every week already. I mean, that's the content that I'm creating. Really? Let me see here. 160 words a minute. How many? 160 times 60, 9,600 words times 5, 48,000 words. Yeah, that's divided by 200 pages, 200 words, that's about 240 page, call it a 200 page book every week I'm delivering on the podcast. Now, some of it's not, book worthy content, but you know what I'm saying. And so I had this, information that I would love to put together, and it brought up this issue again of how to write a book fast. And now with the other podcast, which I'm a little behind where I wanted to be, and now I'm taking on this project with Stan as well. I'm also still working on finishing up a recording of somebody else's book I'm doing the audio book for. So I'm busier than wings on a gnat right now. I got to get some stuff written. I got to get it done fast. Well, I developed a system that is doing just that. If I wouldn't have had other things going on this weekend, I could have written an entire book in a weekend. And you hear stories about that. And it would have been a great book. It will be a great book. I developed the system, and I'll tell you how I did it. I just told you why I did it, because I'm busy, probably like you. And I've got a great idea for a book, and I'm trying to figure out how to get it done without taking 3 months sabbatical and just focusing on that, which I don't have the luxury of doing anyway. I had to come up with a system for writing a book fast. Well, there are systems out there already. And the most common method that is taught, when you hear stories, you can write a book in a weekend. Here's how you do it. Here's how they tell you to do it. They tell you to dictate it and then have it transcribed. And there's services. You could Google it, transcription services. You could send them an MP3 that you create on your phone, zip it off to them, and they'll convert it for you. I don't think they're typing it. I think they're using software to do it, but I don't know. Either way, you get back a Word file. I've done it before, and they're pretty reliable. I had zero luck using that method for creating a book. I used to use a dictaphone quite a bit back in the day with administrative help back in my project management days, where, you know, you have so much going on that you just have to turn to really increasingly fast ways. It was kind of the same thing as now. But that was different. That was kind of dictating more short things, instructions, a little bit of typing, but not like hours and hours of dictation and have it come out in a coherent book that's good. So the dictation method, and the other thing with the dictation, and I never really bought any software. I think there's like Dragon Naturally Speaking or something like that. I'm sure there's some others. But like I tried on my phone using the note program, and you know, it couldn't keep up. There's no punctuation. It doesn't know when the sentences end. It was missing some words. And what you ended up with was something that was completely, you know, unrecognizable. So the dictation thing was out. So then I follow a guy named Brian Tracy. You can check him out. He's pretty cool. Does coaching, sales, motivational speaking, personal development stuff. He's been around a long time, and I've been following him for a long time. Well, he sent me this thing, How to Write a Book Fast, and he's got this outlining system where you kind of create a grid, which your main topics, your subtopics, those become your chapters and your paragraph structure, and you use that to put the book together. You kind of fill in the blanks then to create the book. And it's a pretty powerful system, but it's still manual, still typing, not dictating. So, you can speak 160 words a minute. How fast can you type? I don't know. How fast can fast typers type? I think generally speaking, even the fastest typers are like 80 words a minute. That's definitely not me. So you could dictate it twice as fast. I don't know if that's completely true because, the amount of editing that has to be done, and I don't think I could speak a book for the most part at the pace that I talk on the podcast. I know that the testing I've done. Anyway, I combined the two systems and it's worked fabulously. You basically create your outline structure for the book. You create your outline structure for the paragraphs, and then you can use that as an outline to then dictate the words and create it from there. And anyway, I created a little video on how to do it using Microsoft Word. It was about a 20-minute video I've sent out only to some very close friends. And we'll see. I might write a book or do some training about that. I don't know how many people would be interested in learn how to write a book fast. But if you have an idea and it's something you want to do, I may have that. I'm sure I'll send out an update on something like that by email. So if you're interested in learning about future authoring and writing a book fast, if I produce something on that, that's how I would put it out by email. So sign up for my email list at ChristopherScottShow.com. That's also where you can leave me a message right on the homepage. There's a little form you can submit. Send that to me. It comes into an app on my phone. It's kind of like a text. And I usually respond a couple times a day. As a matter of fact, since I'm mentioning that, I got a message here from Caroline. She says, I'm not going to mention the exact place just to respect people's privacy. She's from a foreign country. She said she had lived in the United States for 21 years, but moved to where she is in 2018. And she said she's been mostly listening to podcasts from NPR. Now, she's a new listener, relatively speaking, but you all who have been listening for a while have heard me talk about NPR. I'm going to comment about it again here. But let's talk about what she said first. She said, I've listened mostly to podcasts from NPR, but lately I'm having a hard time because it seems to me that NPR is really focused on influencing its listeners or even want to, quote, educate them when it comes to certain topics. And it's all the woke, politically correct, latest liberal talking points. That's all it is. Anyway, she says, I was looking for something different and came across your podcast, and I wanted to let you know this is exactly what I need right now. Somebody with common sense in these very confusing times. That's a very kind compliment. It means a lot. Thank you so much, Caroline. And I'm glad you're enjoying the podcast. this Sunday, Monday podcast, it really was the Monday podcast, the Monday morning podcast. I started publishing it early on Sundays, and it's kind of changed the format a little bit to where it's more of a general topic thing, depending on what's going on in the country. And I could run down all the politics and the news with you, and I'm sure I could get your blood pressure up and all that, but I don't know how much sense there is to be made out of that. And you know, I appreciate your comments, Caroline. I mean, that's what I try to do, is to make sense out of nonsense. And I don't know how long exactly you've been listening. Did you say here? I want to talk about this NPR thing too. But anyway, you know, I was getting a little out of hand emotionally on the podcast. I mean, I was getting some good feedback. I think there was a lot of you on for the ride, but we probably lost some people there too that I probably would have preferred not have lost as listeners. It's meant to be more of an intellectual podcast, but not like necessarily Jordan Peterson, you know, the deepest questions of the universe intellectual either. I mean, I'm just trying to bring some common sense talk, regular speak, in a conversational tone, like we're talking as friends, really. That's all I'm trying to do. And NPR is very polished and very deliberate. And now, let's hear from Chappaquiddick. You know, and it's all nonsense. It's so overproduced. And there certainly is an agenda. And there's only one point of view. Only one point of view that they keep piping out, that they have a monopoly on the market virtually. I don't think it's completely accurate to say that. But the NPR, being funded by the government, is creating a lot of problems in the broadcasting industry because they're sucking up a ton of airtime. They're the biggest provider. And guess who it is out of Europe? BBC. All this news and information, these government propaganda news organizations. And we fund it. I mean, this is another example of the death of conservatism in this country. That NPR is funded with tax dollars. Nothing's done about it. And it's only a one-sided story. And that's left, 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 and left. That's all you get. You don't get any whys. You don't get any explanation. You'll get some history and talking points, but only to drive their point home. And all of that is my opinion, of course. There's no way to factually prove or disprove any of that, I suppose. I don't know. I'm not trying to prove it or not. I'm just, you go listen to it and decide for yourself. Caroline obviously did, and well, you know, I think she thinks like I do. Thank you, Caroline. Anyway, I got off point. I wanted to thank Caroline, then we got into that NPR thing. But I said, I was talking about how to write a book fast. Well, let me tell you the book that I'm writing and the new podcast. And this book begins with asking, have you ever felt with the feeling of getting sucked underwater? I mean, imagine you're swimming, whether it's a pool, right? It's like that Jaws fear thing, right? It's like your worst fear, the dark water. A lot of people can't handle it. They're getting sucked under. Well, you know, if you never felt it, I can tell you, having experienced it twice in my life, that it's never a pleasant feeling. I've also seen it happen to somebody else in a situation that didn't react so well. They didn't react so well. And the consequences were devastating. And the point is that if you're in a water survival situation, and others, but I'm talking about a water survival situation right now, you either learn how to stay calm and know how to deal with the situation, or you don't. There's no in between to all that. But it's that zone in between knowing and not knowing what to do, between surviving and quitting. That's what I'm writing this book about. That to teach the mastering of the process of learning to navigate difficult circumstances. And guess what? It's not just about survival. It's not just about tragic situations. Those same things apply to every area of your life, really. And including writing books fast. And you might think it's kind of funny that I say that. But it's true. It's really true. It's many of the same principles. It's a lot of the same stuff. And a lot of it's already been taught. I'm pulling it all together and, you know, putting it in my own voice and trying to apply it to a more specific situation. So he said, you know, Chris, I'm not planning on getting into any water survival situations. Why would I be interested in that book or the podcast? Well, like I said, it's applicable to every area of your life. But let's talk about the survival aspect a second. The other great thing that I did this weekend, I got up Saturday morning. I got up at 5:15. I wanted to sleep in. I can't tell you how bad. 7 weeks into my fitness journey here. I'm down 34 pounds. So I'm within 10 pounds of my ultimate goal. I mean, I've already reached my goal weight-wise, but I'm going to keep going. My son and I are getting prepped for a hike from my house to Valley Forge Park, which is 15 miles. We're going to go to General Washington's headquarters. And, you know, mentally speaking, I have it in my mind that this is a mission to save the country because it's the only way I can motivate myself to get up and walk 15 stinking miles. I don't know whose idea. No, I'm kidding. I'm looking forward to it. Where was I going? I was talking about the book, and I got completely off point there. So I got up at 5:15 on Saturday morning. And I've just learned at this point, it's like if I wake up like anytime after 04, I just get up now because there's no point. And some of you know what I'm talking about. Anyway, I get up 5:15 on Saturday and I'm like a little achy and sore from working out. It was a busy week with the snow and everything. And I was like, I gotta go to the local home improvement place. I didn't want to say the name because I don't want to support big corporate right now. Not that I have a problem with the store, but I just have a problem with everything going on right now. Anyway, I run up there and for like three things, and I end up getting like a cartload of stuff. I want to get into gardening a little more this year. We did a little test run last year and it ended badly, but I kind of knew we didn't really prep or anything because we just moved in. But this year I've got leaves and horse manure composting and a nice load of super rich topsoil. And we're going to do some planting of the seeds, start those in March, early March. Well, anyway, I go out Saturday morning. Guess what I got? A blueberry bush. I think I got to get a second one. But anyway, I'm like, how cool would that be to have fresh blueberries in the yard? I'm so excited about that. But, you know, it's the little things. This is the point. I'm like, the world's falling apart. I got a nice piece of property. And why not enjoy it? I mean, this is what I love to do. To wake up and get out on the trail. I don't care how cold it is to get outside and, you know, to be able to, you know, we could live off the land here. It would be a little tight, but we could do it. And I think that being able to provide your own food right now, I think it's something you ought to be thinking about. And you say to me, what do I care? I'm not planning any water survival situations. Listen, I've been telling people for a long time that the biggest thing you probably need to worry about is having heat. And you look at what's happening in Texas, and how many people have listened to me? You know, even my close friends are like, oh, you're a wacko, survival wacko. I'm going to say the space that I have taken up in my house for my, quote, prepping. I don't consider myself a prep. I don't have an underground bunker. The space that I take up is probably like a walk-in closet. 6 months worth of food, 2 months worth of water, filtration, backup lighting, solar lighting, oil-filled lanterns, extra wicks, little Sterno heat sources, long-term food, 25-year storage. I got a month's worth of that, a generator, cords, tarps, seeds, the ability to grow food, the ability to hunt. But it doesn't take up a lot. And, you know, a lot of it is also a hobby for me. And I'm going to get into some other stuff on the podcast. But I believe we have a moral responsibility to our families and our community to be able to take care of ourselves. And, you know, I want to be careful because I don't want to be like dancing on the graves of the people in Texas. They've been suffering like hell down there. And it stinks. I mean, you lose your power. And part of this journey for me and this voice, by the way, is coming from my own experience. I'm giving you a word of caution from what happened to me. Right after we moved, and I've always been a bit of a prepper, I guess you'd say. I mean, I don't really call myself a prepper because it's not like I have 3 years of food and, you know, I don't have gas masks and stuff like that. I got some stuff, but I don't go quite that deep. But I've always been kind of ready to go. But we moved in here, and I don't know, we weren't even settled. We were sleeping on a mattress on the floor in the finished basement because we're waiting on the new flooring to come in, and we lost power. And we've got oil heat and a well. So losing power meant we lost heat and we lost water. And we had nothing. I couldn't even find the flashlight. And when the house goes, and fortunately it was warm enough that we could not have to deal with frozen pipes and things like that. I didn't even really know where all the shutoffs were. I mean, if I had to find them in a pinch, I would have been able to. And, you know, unfortunately, I'm in a position where if I really got jammed up, I've got people around here that I could call. But anyway, my point is this. When the house went quiet and dark, the world changed pretty doggone quickly, let me tell you. And we were fortunate in that situation. We had power back on about, I don't know, 36 hours or something. It was like just long enough to lose everything in the refrigerator. Cost us like, I don't know, $500,000 or something to redo all that. But I was like, right away, I mean, we're in the process of moving. I'm like, I need to make some basic preparations here. You know, the first thing we're going to do is get some backup lighting going. And I have some huge flashlights that also have USB ports that you can recharge as a battery source. I'm not going to go through everything that I have right now, but you know, for people that say, oh, I don't want to do the prepper thing, and they think it's funny or whatever, it's not funny. It's actually pretty serious, really. And you look at what's going on in Texas. You know, do you have an extra stock of blankets? Do you know how to shut the water off? Could you go a week with no connected services? I'm guessing that, by and large, most people can't. That's my guess. So, what else do we want to talk about? I told you about the weekend. I talked about writing the book. Oh, there's an email I got. This is from a person named Hotep. Now, for some reason, I feel like this name rings a bell, but I don't recall any contact with Hotep. So, I don't know if, Hotep, you're a fan of the podcast, that you'll even hear this. I'm guessing not, but I'm guessing that me putting Rush Limbaugh in the subject of a podcast got me this email. But I'm going to just talk about it anyway, because I think there's a lesson here for everybody. Hotep says Rush was a racist, sexist pig. He was a patriotic, racist pig. Surprised you support him, ? How do you justify racism, lynchings, rape of women, abuse of the marginalized? Okay, so I said, I'll explain the problem with your statement on the Sunday Monday podcast. So how do I either prove or disprove the opening statement, he was a patriotic, racist pig? How is that proven or disproven? What's the difference between a racist and a racist pig? We could start there. You know, it's an opinion. You're saying you think he was a racist. What is the definition of a racist? I mean, it's getting thrown around. It's been weaponized, which is really bad for minorities, right? It's bad for I guess, whites that become the target of this crap. But, and I don't even want to go down that, Hotep. I'm not trying to be argumentative either, and I'm going to debate this with you on the merits of it. But to say, well, he's a patriotic, I guess the patriotic was a play on me saying he was patriotic. But he was a racist pig. Surprised that I support him? What do you mean I support him? It's not like I pay Rush. I never subscribed to any. I don't know what you're talking about. I support him. I recognized his broadcasting achievements. I said I was a fan when I was younger. What difference is it I support him? And it's not like he's running for office. I didn't vote for him. I'm not telling anybody to listen to Rush. What's the point now? Anyway, he's dead. support him or not? What are you even asking me? Then he says, Hotep says, how do you justify racism, lynchings, rape of women, abuse of the marginalized? What the hell are you talking about? Rush lynched somebody? Rush raped a woman? Rush Limbaugh has been abusive to the marginalized? You know, this is just such general, vile, anti-American, anti-white attacks, isn't it? Isn't that really what it is? Let's just call it what it is, shall we? Seems pretty clear to me. We just throw out these baseless ideas and baseless claims. Well, Joe Biden's a racist pig. How's that? Why don't you defend that? I'm surprised you support him. How do you support Joe Biden? Rape of women. I don't know. There's some weird videos circulating around abuse of the marginalized. Some of them that I saw the videos of with Joe Biden, they were children. Yeah, that's the truth. I think there's some others too, Hotep. Perhaps I don't like to use the what about excuse, but I mean, if you're really going to pursue that path, I think that you should look into it on a little bit broader than Rush Limbaugh. Also got an email from a listener. I must say I'm pretty flabbergasted by your reply. You have multiple podcasts now explained how terrible tax cuts are. Are you unsure about it now? No, I think, and we did go back and forth by email, so I don't need to rehash this with our friend here. But, and I have a practical tip for you. I'll give you the practical tip, then we'll go through the argument. He says, never buy a large bed like queen or king size, even if you are two people sleeping there. This goes for sheets and blankets also. Buy two beds half the size and connect them underneath. This makes moving them easier and washing them easier. The absolute best part is that one person moves around or gets up, the other bed is barely affected, thus improving sleep quality for the other person. Give it some real thought before dismissing it. I wouldn't dismiss it at all. And then you get kicked to the curb. You can just take your bed with you. Spoken from experience. Let me get back to my feeling on the taxes, because this bears clarity. Taxes in this country that are collected are around 18, I think it ended up last year, about $20,000 for every man, woman, and child in the country. That's the total of all taxes collected from state, local, federal government. $20,000 in tax revenue that our government takes in. It's obscene. It's obscene. If that's not enough, they're borrowing on top of it to the tune of debt now that's, I don't know, around $80,000 for every man, woman, and child in this country. So for a family of four, you have a tax burden, a yearly tax burden, of $80,000 for your share and a debt burden of $320,000. What I was critical about with the Trump tax cuts is that cutting taxes without cutting spending and going on to run up even more debt, which is what he did, is no tax break at all. As a matter of fact, it was the biggest double play of the century, quite frankly, more crafty than anything that Obama did. Now, there was a lot to support. I still believe Trump was a great president. But I don't understand how government never got cut, and I would love to put it to him. The only person that I'm ever aware of that ever put the question to him about the debt was Michael Savage, and Trump said, oh, we were just about to get to that before COVID hit. I would have pressed a little further. Really, what was the plan? It's obscene, the amount of taxes. All I'm saying, though, is if you cut taxes and borrow more to cover the gap, that's no tax cut. I mean, do we not agree, right? And I know from this back and forth that you understand that you know, it's going to be a future payments on that. Not only that, you're going to be paying interest on it. It's an increased cost. And where'd the money go? Where did the money go? It's the same question that I asked after all of the spending, the record spending that Obama, I was so critical of it. How do conservatives become critical of the Obama era spending, but say nothing about the Trump era spending? I don't see the logic of that. And when you talk about, you know, partisan stupidity, I don't know, what do you want to, blindness, blind loyalty? What do you call it? It doesn't seem right to me that we're going to, look, they're both separate issues, agreed. Very separate issues, yes. But they're tied together. They're tied together all the same. And the reality is that our government, their politicians, it's not the Constitution's fault. It's not the form of government's fault. It's not democracy's fault. It's the fault of the political class that doesn't do what the people want. Ask any person if they think that all this debt is a good idea. Any liberal, any conservative, not one citizen will tell you it's a good idea, but yet it's been allowed to continue year after year. And I believe that it's that very issue that was allowed to be created. This vast run-up in debt was allowed to be created because the chains of bondage have already been created between us and government vis-a-vis the 16th Amendment, the income tax. And it's now been weaponized to enslave the entire population, much like what has happened in Europe, such as the case with Sweden. How do you say you're free under those kind of taxes and that kind of debt burden? Here, in other countries, it doesn't matter. And the form of government doesn't really matter at that point, because at that point, what does it differ? You're a communist, you're a capitalist. You have no money left after the government takes theirs. What have we gained since the Revolutionary War on with where we've ended up? And what has the result of it been? I've talked about this passionately, that this financial mismanagement, this gross feeding of the upper classes, that's what it is. You know it, I know it, even Antifa knows it. It's destroyed inner cities. Now, when we're coming to the bitter end of this wild ride, what do? They pit us against each other for fear that we're going to see who's really behind it. It's created mass chaos everywhere, created mass mistrust, and things are going to keep getting worse as long as we allow it to. And, you know, the audacity of these politicians to turn around and blame these problems on us, to blame it on American business, to blame it on capitalism, even our Constitution, to trash our flag. The audacity. Tell me, who if they're going to blame it on American business and capitalism and the Constitution and the white racists, who voted for the debt? Who voted? What citizens voted to approve foreign interests, special interests, and the business interests of the politicians to overrun our politics? Tell me what capitalists supported that. Tell me what constitutionalists supported all this corruption. No, they didn't. It didn't happen. It was only the political class that did it. The Republicans and the Democrats, the parties, the one party, the two party, it might as well be one. We're worse off now. We would be better off with one party. At least we wouldn't have the conflict. We've got the worst of both worlds. But here's the core of the problem with all this talk, globalism, socialism, federalism. It all comes down to this: who decides? And I say that the tyranny has to end. What am I talking about? Well, the people have to decide for themselves how much they should be taxed and how much control they give to the government. And right now it's backwards. And even that has limitations, by the way, bound by the Constitution. Right now you get more taxes, more debt, no matter which way you vote. And that's my point in bringing that whole thing up about the debt and taxes in the first place. We didn't get lower taxes under Trump. We got higher taxes. The federal government spent more than ever. By far, no matter which way you vote, you end up with more rules, more regulations. Trump came in and deregulated at the federal level. It's true, he did, on a mass scale. And look what happened. State and local governments ramped up their regulation. There was a time that both parties more or less agreed that there was a line for government, that they didn't want us in the bedroom, the government that wasn't going to be in the bedrooms of the people, for example. But now it's to the point that government's deciding which bathrooms we have to use. You know, it makes no sense. Speaking of makes no sense, look at what's happened with the social media protection. Big media gets protection. The citizens get nothing. What kind of government is that? Are you telling me that that's how the Constitution was drafted to operate? They've taken away our vote. They've taken away our voice. And they've created this us versus them, winner-takes-all approach to politics that it does nothing but destroy the fabric of our society. Tell me how I'm wrong. Now they're working on coming for the guns. What will be left then? What will be left when they take the guns? They've taken our voice. They'll take away our protection. You want to talk about the Second Amendment for a minute? It's morally right to have an armed citizenry. What is it really about? It has nothing to do with hunting or automatic rifles or a militia even. Here's the basic spirit of the Second Amendment, and that is this. The Founding Fathers, believing that it was a moral right of the people to be able to protect themselves from any danger. And don't you think that that is, in fact, compassionate? Why is it never published when guns save lives? No, because the state-sponsored media, the state-controlled media, they only tell you the story they want you to hear. And it never leads to more freedom and less debt, does it? I don't know when people's eyes are going to be open. I can't talk people into getting a backup heat source, let alone taking a different look at how poorly our government's being operated. Hey, listen, you know, you hear me talking about the time I've been investing in myself and developing myself, getting in shape. And I've been in this groove that I've been talking about. Give it a try. For me, it starts with optimal nutrition, getting outside, getting exercise, walking every day on top of a super dialed-in nutrition plan. You want to know what it looks like? Here's what it looks like. Raw vegetables and lean protein. Eggs, chicken, shrimp, seafood, fish, a little bit of steak, healthy fats like hummus, a little bit of olive oil. All right, when you eat like that and you make sure that you're getting your proper micronutrients, right now I'm operating at a calorie deficit because I need to lean out. And it's amazing. One of these days I'm gonna publish the photos. I'm in week 7. I basically met my goal at week 5. I needed to be able to fit back in my suit jacket, and I did that well. As a matter of fact, at this point, it's getting a little big. How's that? But here's my point. Not to brag to you, but I appreciate you letting me do that because I really do feel good, and I put a lot into it, and it's paid off. And I hope that's an inspiration to you, and that's really why I brought it up. Give it some thought. Investing in yourself. I'm not saying you got to go on a crazy optimal nutrition and walking every day if that's not your thing, but investing in yourself physically, mentally, spiritually, preparing yourself for tomorrow and the next journey, the next part of your life, and doing the best you can and committing yourself to doing what's right. I promise you from my own experience that there will be doors that open and opportunities that present themselves that you never thought were imaginable. God willing, I'll be back tomorrow. I sure hope to see you there. Make it a great day.